Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just for a reminder, joining us, we have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And please use Chrome, because they don't seem to like anything but Chrome. Annoying as all get out, but okay. If you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters, where I announce all these wonderful podcasts. And the topics for the evening is on SFU On Call. That's SFUONCAL. Also, my personal account is Paul Franz. So you can find me there. Just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. Yes, there is no T in it. If you live in Pennsylvania, there's no T in it. And of course, there is my business account, which is Franz Games, which is FranzGames, where I announce news and things like client updates and things like that. Also, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and Google Play and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. They released some newsletters on the 11th of December. If I recall correctly, that was both of them. The communique. Okay. Steve Cole is busy working comps log number 53. Also, of course, the blogs and artwork for the Gorn Master Starship book and the Christmas newsletter with a new polar ship, which should be interesting. If you ever remember some of the polar ships in the past, basically they're the shape of a sleigh with the reindeer on the front. I can see what Steve Cole has in mind for that. Steve Petrick was busy, of course, working with SFB updates, also working on the Gorn Master Starship book, you know, all the text and all that kind of thing. And Gene was busy working on the GURPS Prime Directive revision. Yay! Every single time I hear that, I'm happy. Because I know Jean's been busy working on this, and obviously she has not been able to do it full time. I wish she could, because it'd be done a lot faster. But of course, Jean's only one person; she has all these responsibilities, including, I'm not limited to, managing the Facebook page and people will contact them, you know, message on the page itself, and she'll respond. So to keep that quite busy. Of course, the Twitter feed. I follow them on Twitter, but I don't know what kind of interactions they get. They have 281 followers currently. And also beats down on the spam that comes up every once in a while on the BBS. This week, actually, we had like two or three, which was really goofy. And of course, takes care of the customers. Unfortunately, this week that she was attacked by this really nasty dog. She's right now healing up, but she's doing okay, though. Last thing I saw on her Facebook feed was that one of the medicines was not sitting well with her stomach. If that's all it is for some of the medication she has to take, I think that's a win in my category. Moving on to the SFB Online tournaments, Masters tournament. The round one is still, you know, as I've repeated before, round one is completed. There's only two round two play games gone. My game, for my round two game, will continue sometime next week, depending upon how long my opponent gets stuck at Gatwick because of some drones that are buzzing the airport. Gotta love that. If the police catch up with those people with the drones, they're gonna be in trouble. Moving on, the Rad 48 tournament run by Ron Brimar, still no progress. And next, even Gene was asking, going, "Oh, what's up with this, guys?" And I agree. and no progress. And unfortunately, we're not going to reach the 90% completion that I would like to see for the end of the year. And part of that, I have to say, is my fault because I have not actually done some of the things like just checking on the list to see where we are, you know, and possibly bugging Steve Cole. Now, obviously, Steve Cole has been a little busy with other real life issues at the moment. So I'm not sure if he could have actually been done much in the past couple of months. But he's, you know, not been so lame up that he has been incapacitated, but still, you know, completed conversion 2,426. You have to be converted 906, and that still leaves the percentage complete of 72.8. I'll see at the very least if I can have a breakdown of those yet to be converted. So then, guys, have a general idea. Okay, what are Omega? What are, you know, the different empires that still need to be done? And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, I was just about to get ahead of myself there. We got me, we got Barry, we've got Dave, and we got Russ. Thank you, Russ and Dave, for joining me in the chat room. And Lord knows, I didn't do a good job of broadcasting where I was going to be this evening and what the topic is going to be for the evening. I've only been doing it like via Twitter. Didn't do it during Facebook or the discussion board or even in the Discord server. I've just been kind of crazy lately. Today it's just weird. But anyhow, this is going to be the last podcast before Christmas. And I have no ideas. Actually, I do have an idea for a topic, but that'll come up probably a little bit later. But the first topic for this evening actually is going to be about Christmas, or at least I call it Christmas spirit is what I call it, not necessarily. And might as well start with saying Merry Christmas, Barry.
Merry Christmas, Paul.
So,
definitely. Good time of year.
Mm-hmm. Have you got your house all ready for Christmas?
Actually,
do you have a house or apartment at this point? I forget.
I actually was home earlier today, but now I'm driving west of Knoxville, headed to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So driving down I-40. Yeah, it's a long, long drive.
My wife was on that road just a little bit ago.
I drove home Tuesday. But yesterday was my daughter's college graduation. They bragged here.
Mm-hmm.
From Temple University in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She's got a good school.
Yeah,
great
yeah.
school.
Yeah, my ex neighbor, his son graduated from Temple.
And my daughter got a bachelor's science in electrical engineering.
Awesome! Wow.
That makes her a fourth generation electrical engineer.
Dang, awesome.
Yeah, it runs in the family.
I assume she started looking for jobs and all?
Oh, she found a great job. So, what's that?
Where? In Philadelphia area, or is it in New York or someplace else?
No. It's in Virginia.
Ah,
so
northern or southern?
Manassas, not far outside. I guess it's 20 minutes out of the Pentagon. So I only know the name of the company she's working for. I will not ask her, and she will not tell me what she will be doing. I presume that she's going to be doing a lot of military stuff. But it's Lockheed Martin.
Ah, That's military. That's a lot of military, though. I think that, don't they also do some civilian planes?
Yes, I believe they do have civilian planes, but from what I understand, they're mostly military.
Right.
So
right.
I don't
That's
know
where
what,
the big bucks
wanna,
are.
I
so.
Don't want to know what she's doing. I don't want to ask, and I don't expect her to tell me, and she hasn't.
Understood.
So that's the way I want to keep it. Uh-huh. Yeah. That, yeah.
Understood.
Yep.
Yeah, so got all the wonderful things happening here. We got things set up for Christmas. The crazy part about for us this year is that this past year we got a chest, which we keep in the dining room. There's only one minor problem with that chest. We have no place to move it. The only reason that's an issue is because last year, that's where we put the Christmas tree. So we don't have a Christmas tree up this year because we have no place to put it. When you move from a 3,200 square foot house to a 1,400 square foot house, things have to change.
How many square feet do you have now?
1,400.
Oh, that's a huge house compared to where I'm at.
You're down to like 800 or something?
What's that?
Wow, what's the size of your house, dude? Jeez.
Yeah, well, since you were at our house, my son has taken the front bedroom, and we've rented out the downstairs. So we only have the top floor. Which isn't a problem, but, well, you've seen our upstairs kitchen and living room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is literally half our square footage, that one room.
Wow.
That's not a big room.
No, that's, you're basically right now, at this point, you have an apartment is what you got.
Well, let's put it this way. I come home and it's like, I don't even have a place to put my suitcase.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
I have more room in a hotel room. I can open up my suitcase and leave it open in a hotel room. Can't do that at home.
Yep. Understood.
Yeah. But then again, I'm never there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. This is, of course, a time for counting our blessings, and Lord knows we have many.
Absolutely.
And one of those blessings that this, in my mind, is that Steve Cole is still around. You know.
Yeah, that is a blessing.
And he has surgery scheduled for February, I think it is. He announced on the discussion board.
What surgery?
I forgot what the surgery was. He was supposed to have it like a month or so ago. I'm just going to see if. Okay, Leanna had her surgery when she had her surgery in October. And that's why he had to delay his, because otherwise there was no way to get around town. Okay. Let's see if I can find the information, because I don't remember. Okay. Okay, I'm going to check one more time, and if I can't check the last time, I'm just going to... Oh, okay. So, yeah, Steve's original surgery was scheduled for the 15th of October. Okay, let's see if... I talk about regimented diet. Da-da-da-da. Oh, it's supposed to have weight loss surgery.
It's a what?
Weight loss surgery.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, agreed.
What, one of those laparoscopic bands or something?
Well, it's not. I'm not sure. I don't think he mentions that. Okay, but his his surgery is scheduled for 20th of January. Leanne is supposed to get released and be declared to be able to walk and drive on the 8th. And then after that, he has a 2-week special diet, which he actually previously announced what that was. Steve Cole's kind of surgery said that he said that Medicare insists they use on a Monday, so it slides to the 28th. You know, right? Blah blah blah. Okay, which is interesting.
Well, but
Hey.
Well, he will be in my prayers.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people's prayers, and definitely anyone's listening.
Yeah.
Obviously, keep him in your prayers, especially near. Near his surgery date.
Yeah.
Hopefully it will help him, because I'm assuming, you know, with the weight and all, it's not exactly helping his knees and things like that.
That's actually a pretty major one, from what I understand. Or is it? Maybe. I don't know.
Which one? You mean the...
The stomach...
Well,
you put a band around the stomach?
The band is... It's relatively simple. You stay like one... You stay overnight, and then you're usually discharged next day.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's my wife. She had a band, and that's what she did.
Yeah,
definitely the whole thing where they cut out part of your intestine. I really don't agree with that one at all. Because in my mind, you're really altering your body to the degree where you are really you're asking for trouble. You know,
right? Oh, like, I understand
absorption
that.
of nutrients and so forth becomes an issue and all that kind of thing. So it's like, let's skip that. That's why my wife originally went for the ban.
Oh, got a question for you. I friended you on through the Ages app. So I found Andromedan and I friended you, but did you receive that friend request?
Oh, which friend request?
Well, there's the app Through the Ages where you created username.
Yeah, yeah. I apologize. I have not actually had a chance to bring it up since you created the game. I'm sorry.
Well, I created a game. It expired. I created a game with no expiration, and it went away.
Okay. I'll do something about that. Give me a sec here, because Russ actually mentioned something on the chat. Oh, yes, Russ. Okay. Cool. Sorry, what I was reading about is actually Russ is our local monster creator. He's created a few monsters, and he even did a video for me. Of how he was using, I think it was Vizio, I think it was. Sure Russ will correct me. And how he used it to actually test his monsters out, which actually was quite interesting. But also, yes, yeah. Russ, I would love if you had a recording of it, and I would be happy to either insert directly into the podcast here. Because actually, I have a way of doing that, of actually adding it to the live feed so people can listen to it, and also it can be recorded at the same time, which would be okay. Cool. I did remember, right, it was Vizio, because Russ was doing certain things in Vizio which I didn't think you could do. You know? And it's like, It was almost like a program using, creating a program within Vizio. So I was like, wow. So.
The last time I used Vizio was a long time ago. I'm sure they've improved it quite a bit. And yeah, I guess back when I was using it, it was used for static flow charts, but I guess you can use it for programmatic stuff now.
Well, some of the things that he did was where he had different elements actually react to different events.
Right. Okay. So you can put events and stuff like that. And that's part of Vizio I've never used before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, wow. I didn't realize it had that capability. But now you mention it, yes, it must.
Yeah, yep. It was really awesome what Russ did. But yeah, Russ, please, by all means, I would love to have some additional content to put into the podcast.
Yeah.
And if maybe.
So when he says Monster Creation, is this like for what game?
SFP.
D&D or
SFP.
What's that?
SFP.
Oh, SFP Monster.
Yes.
Okay. Space monsters.
Space monsters. All kinds of wonderful things. He's submitted a few to ADB, and they've been rejected. But, he tries to, in some cases, for different reasons. But, one of those things, obviously, is he wants to make sure he can playtest the monsters. Though I think I got one of his monsters, and I just there's certain things that I just did not like about the way it worked. I think when it comes to movement, and I forgot how long, it's been a while since I can't quite remember exactly what that was.
Okay, which monster would that have been?
Oh, I forgot. Monsters that don't exist yet, Barry.
What's that?
Monsters that don't exist. He's creating them.
Oh, okay.
Do I still have it? Give me a sec. Let me see if I still have the emails for SFU on call. Kraken was one of them.
Okay.
So he did a bunch of ones for the Halloween Monster SFU on call, which he recorded, did some stuff for last year, which was quite cool. He had a recording that he had for the Vizio stuff was for the Kraken.
Okay.
And
so this generates a random monster.
No, it doesn't generate a monster. He was creating rules for a monster to use in a scenario.
Ah, okay. Okay, I'm confused what Vizio was used for.
For playing the game. He played SFP in Vizio. And then he would record.
Gotcha.
He'd have it as part of a recording of the game, so then he could go review that that game to see, okay, was the loss or what the outcome? Why did it occur that way? Was it? Did it occur because of tactics involved? Did it occur because of the randomness of the dice? Did it occur because there's something wrong with the monster itself, the rules for the monster itself?
Gotcha.
This is all kind of analysis stuff that as playtesters that you need to do. You know, because
yeah,
you know, a good playtester will at least give you here's my playtest report. Here's the game I played. These are the tactics involved. These are the movements that were done. You know, and all this kind of things, and possibly even at the end you might give some suggestions or what you think you found. But, you know, Russ is doing this for himself. You know, he's doing his own reviews. You know, which is always a difficult thing.
Yeah, I may lose you at some point. I'm climbing. I don't know if you're familiar with Tennessee, but west of Knoxville, there's an escarpment, and I'm climbing the escarpment right now.
Okay.
So. Yeah, and usually cell signals are pretty good on interstates, and this is a major interstate, I-40.
Oh, I know.
But it is hilly terrain.
Yeah. Oh, just a reminder that Russ pointed, just reminding me that I used Vizio as a playtest environment to log everything from what happens. He actually... he adds actually different logs the actions that are taking place, including not just movement, but also firing weapons or the monster attacks and uses this kind of attack, things like that.
Right.
Also, what he says also points out that what I'm planning slash thinking at the moment in the game. Which is one of those things that I kind of did with a recording of one of the games I play, which I'm still waiting for my dear sweet round two player to get to get home. Basically, you hear about the issue in Gatwick, Barry?
What's that?
Did you hear about the issue at Gatwick? The airport at Gatwick.
Oh, that's in England, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
No, what happened?
They're having drones buzz the frickin' airport. And they have shut down the airport.
Oops.
Trying to get rid of these drones because people are sending these drones, which are making it unsafe for them to take off, have the planes take off. So at the moment...
Why are they doing that? Just because?
You got me. They haven't found the people who are flying these drones.
Oh.
Somebody flying drones into the airspace of the airport, and until they can shut down these drones, they're not going to allow any flights taking off or landing.
Yeah.
So
now you got to ask the question: if that's happening, at some point they're going to say, "Okay, we'll set up and take one of these drones out, and then go over it with a fine-tooth comb for fingerprints and stuff like that."
Yeah, the tough part is going to be finding a safe way of doing it because they thought about shooting it out of the sky, but they're concerned about stray bullets.
Well, yes.
Yeah, where they're going to go.
But that's what shotguns are all about.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, at the moment, my dear sweet opponent for my Masters tournament is stuck in Gatwick.
Oh. Can't get out. That sucks.
Yeah. When you shut down the airport, you can't
really
get out,
suck.
Dude. Yeah.
How long has this been going on?
It started, I think it's just been going on today. And he was supposed to fly out today. And what did he say in the email? In the email, he said, A pseudo terrorist, i.e. this drone person, has shut down Gatwick for 36 hours with a couple of drones. And he's stuck there with 10,000 other people for several days. So.
Ouch.
Yep.
Ouch. Yeah. Yeah, I suspect there's going to be some prison time for whoever's doing it when they finally catch him.
Yeah. The question is, will they catch him or not? Yeah. Sooner or later,
eventually they.
Oh yeah, agreed.
If they keep it up, eventually they'll catch them.
Agreed. The question is how long.
Now, hopefully, now what do they do if it's like a 10-year-old kid? You know, but.
Agreed, and I'm sure it's illegal to fly drones inside of an airport. You know, the airspace of an airport.
One could only presume. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know it is in the U.S.
Yeah.
So I would believe that that'd be the same thing in the U.K. You know.
One can only presume. And if it's not illegal yet, it will be right now. They will pass that legislation.
Oh, agreed.
But yeah.
Yeah, so I have to wait for a bit. I'm hoping to continue my game. That's one thing I need to do, which is look up what is the maximum length of a video. Because I currently have around a 2.5-hour video, which is part one, quote unquote part one. I'm not sure how many parts it will be, but can I upload this whole 2.5-hour video, or do I need to split it up into smaller videos?
Right.
But the whole
I don't know.
Right. The whole idea of the video is so basically to have people, you know, be maybe a little more excited about SFB as who was it? Patience Zero. On YouTube. You know, he's kind of frustrated by that I'm not showing more, you know, gameplay videos. And it's like, okay, dude, how? Where do I go to actually record a full game video? And then, you know.
Right.
You know. True, there are certain things I can do to help that situation, which I need to work on, i.e., one of those is send out a mailing or two to see if I can get some volunteers to be more upfront. Because we used to do this a lot, you know, previously we used to announce, okay, we're going to be playing our game online at 9 o'clock on Eastern Time on Thursday or something along those lines. And then people could stop by and watch, you know, but that really happens these days. So, you know, see if I can get people to email me and tell me that they're going to be recording, they're going to be doing a game and I can record it. Now, another thing that was, of course, brought up was speed of play. SFB speed of play is much slower than, let's say, X-Wing, which is the one thing he keeps on showing me. Because the game will be over in like an hour.
Right.
Well,
Starfleet Battles was never known for fast play.
Exactly. So one thing actually we did discuss 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago because it was one before the Christmas gift episode. And that was the whole idea of speed play for, SFB speed play.
Well, remember the old Starfleet Command?
Mm-hmm.
The computer game. It was real time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely real time.
It's a shame that went down the tubes because that had promise.
Well, of course it has promise. And then they had the license from Paramount. Paramount pull the license. Well, actually, no. First, yeah. they had to appease Paramount. At least this is the way I see it. I don't know if this is truly the case, but this is the way I feel about it. Which is Paramount. They had to appease Paramount, where they had to use more modern, more up to date, Star Trek stuff. When they had to license it through Paramount instead of licensing it through ADB.
Right.
So, they had a year and Paramount didn't like the return on investment and they pulled the license and that killed it.
Yep.
So, so Starfleet Command is, that killed it right there. We were discussing the whole idea of speed play, and of course the biggest issue with speed play in my mind is penalties. What do you do if the player goes past the allotted time?
Right.
I figure for SFB, the only penalty you can give for when it comes to movement is just, you have to go straight. Because
you do what?
You have to go straight. You can't turn.
Okay.
You can't turn, can't slip, you have to go straight. And if you go right into a wall, you go right into the wall.
Well, the other thing is if you wait too long, but you could also, you can do it one of three ways. Either make them go straight, but what happens if they're sitting there trying to figure things out during impulse activity? Do I want a tractor? Do I want a fire?
Barry, that's different. Because it's split up into movement versus action. You've got 30 seconds. Well, you had 15 seconds to decide on movement.
Okay.
And I think it was like 30 seconds to decide on an action.
Oh, if you don't use the action, then it goes away?
Right.
Or you lose the opportunity to do it, action?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
And there's one thing that maybe you know, but I don't know. I've seen, many times when people play chess, you have that timer. What's that? You know what that timer's used for?
I haven't played speed chess before, but I think that if you run out of time, you lose the game automatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because the biggest issue I discussed speed play was EAs. What in the world do you do with that? And the best thing I could come up with was basically use the priorities that are done via damage. What's it? I call it like reallocation due to damage, but it was energy balance due to damage. That rule.
Well, the other thing you could do is you start with full power, and then you have a certain amount of time. And the further over your time you go, you just start losing points of power.
That's a possibility there. It's a gradual penalty. Because what I was thinking was basically, energy balance due to damage. Use those rules for a hierarchy of what it would do. It would select the speed for you. That was valid. Then weapons, and then, shield. Well, I would start obviously with the standard stuff. What we call housekeeping. Then go down to speed, and then go down to weapons. Basically allocate for you. Obviously, your option of actually decreasing the amount of power that you have available to you, I think it actually might be a better idea, just because of the, it's a lot easier to implement. It's like
okay.
It's like the old SAP tournament rule, which is if you're late for your appointed game, you take hull hits until you got run out of hull, and then you then we start rolling the DAC. Until you got there, I forget. I'd have to bring out the tournament rule book to find out what was the time scale of that, i.e. was it like every 10 minutes you got another whole box or what? You know, was it 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15, you know, minute? I don't think it was a minute. I think it was like somewhere like 10 minutes. 5 or 10 minutes, you get a new whole box would be marked off. But as I said,
then you could still get show up an hour late and still have an almost fightable ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd have to look at the time scale, because I said it might be a minute. For each minute you get a whole box not marked off, which means within an hour you have unusable ship. Possibly even after half an hour, because as I said, after you go through all the hull, then you start rolling the deck. So,
I'd say a half hour you have an unfightable. You're not going to be. There's no possibility of winning at that point, no mm-hmm. matter what you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the whole idea of
and Andromeda would really get screwed on that one.
Oh, no kidding! No kidding, because if you lose your batteries, you're dead. It's simple.
Yeah. And the Orion would get screwed pretty quick, too.
Yeah. Yes, Russ. Yeah. That was the one other thing that Russ was doing, which is his Conger Eels. Okay.
Yeah.
He said he finally refined his Conger Eels to where fighter pilots will tremble in fear, as I had always intended for them to do, a knife edge scenario from start to end, where my only concern at this point is it's too sharp. Yeah. You can't have it that fine of an edge, because, you know, people have to be able to make a mistake and not lose just because of a single mistake. You know.
Right. Now, with time limits, now, you're just talking about ship, but what about seeking weapons and fighters and shuttles?
Well, it's all movement.
Okay.
You have 15 seconds to move everything that you own.
Has to go now, straight.
I haven't said, but... When I said back in the podcast, one thing that this would only work for tournaments. This would not work for fleet battles. Fleet battles are a totally different animal, and I don't think there's any way to really speed it up.
Yeah. Now, here's a bizarre thing. What if I want my seeking weapon to go straight, but it normally wouldn't? And I just say, I'll just wait, and then it has to go straight. Or do I wait, and then it has to do what it would normally do?
No, well, for most part, seeking, in my mind, seeking weapon shouldn't have it. You'd move it like you normally would movement. You know, it's just that, you know, you still use seeking weapon rules. Obviously, the one thing that people always are, you have one choice, and you have to take it. I want to move it over here. I want to do a side slip instead of going straight, or I want to turn instead of doing a side slip. You get to move it after 15 seconds. You get to move it once, immediately. You have nothing else. If if we really want to make a penalty out of it, destroy the seeking weapon. Say it's gone.
There you go.
Because of, I thought of some other ideas for it, which was some of those ideas were as simple as just saying, okay, the ship doesn't move. But that would be a benefit. Because basically you're turning SFB into FedCom. But worse. But very much worse. Because of, at least in FedCom, it costs you a point of power to stop. Not stop, but,
right.
But kind of cancel movement. It costs you something.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I would love to have a little more action in SFB, but SFB is what SFB is. You know, as I said, we could increase the play so that it requires, you know, minimum of, you know, a maximum of 15 seconds per turn. But, you know, that makes it, okay, what's 32 divided by 4 is 8. That means each turn would take, for movement, it would be 8 minutes. Now, at the same time, Each turn, you have to give the person at least, like, let's say 30 seconds to decide on action. So, if you know, that means you have to add that into it, so that's another 16 minutes. So 16 plus 8, so each turn can take a maximum of 24 minutes. Which is a pretty fast game, if you think about it.
No doubt about it.
You know,
that plus energy allocation.
Plus energy allocation, which give people 5 minutes.
Yeah, so if you have a seeking weapon that's automatically destroyed, if you don't move it in time, I could see some tactics where you might want to destroy a seeking weapon. That'll destroy it. For example, like a plasma torpedo that you don't want them to know whether it's pseudo or real, I just won't move it. They went away.
That's true. It's self-seeking.
Sorry to throw the monkey wrench in there, but...
Well, in that case, it just shows you that you can't do that. You'd have to basically do a quick move at that point.
Yeah.
You know, if necessary, you know, when it comes to the client could actually handle, you know, do auto move for all seeking weapons.
Right.
And if that be necessary in the client, do it, you know. You know,
if there's a possibility of two moves, it might randomly pick.
Right. You know, and I would think also for some, you know, the automatic move stuff for seeking weapons, you know, that could actually be, heck, that could be a requirement for speed play, which is you no longer get to choose exactly where your seeking weapon is. The client will decide for you.
Or here's an even better one. Do a random move for ships, too. So you're sitting there, you're futzing, and all of a sudden, hey, I turn left. Crap.
Yeah, but Barry, I'm not talking about doing random moves, forcing people to do random moves at this point. What I'm talking about is for... to speed up play, if you're playing SFB online, have it so that if you're playing it, there's an automatic movement system for seeking weapons, and during speed play, it would automatically you'd be forced to use it, so the client controls it. You no longer have to move your seeking weapon; you just have to move your ship. You know.
Oh, and the seeking weapons automatically move themselves.
Right.
Ah.
So it takes that bit of part out of the equation.
That could change things drastically, because what if I deliberately set my, I've seen people deliberately jinx drones around so that they can bypass another drone.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
For example. And now that might not be a possibility.
Correct. But this is all, it would be all in the name of speed play. It's the idea. It's not to penalize it. Because I'm sorry, there's no way. It's a rare thing that anyone would actually try to do that. Because of the only reason you want to try to avoid a drone is if you think that drone's target on your drone.
Yeah.
And how often does that occur?
Right.
Because of all the games I've played, I might have done that when it comes to a tournament game, I might have done that once. Maybe twice. But it's a...
Well, you normally play drone-using races.
That's true. But when I do play drone-using races, and against another drone-using race, I usually don't launch the drones at the drones themselves. Because most of the time, in that case, you want to use drones as a terrain feature. You're trying to force your opponent to go where you want him to go. Now, if you're down on weapons, yeah. That's one way to keep the number of drones down. But even that, that's one thing I'd have to look up the rules on. Because that's always something that was always kind of quirky. Because here's the thing. If you have a drone target on another drone, that means, in theory, that the drone that is basically targeted on another drone, that one should always go last.
Yes.
Because it's targeting on a drone. Now, the thing is, drones invariably they all move at the same time.
Correct. And so, therefore, you almost have to announce the target, even though it's not been ID'd.
You don't have to announce the target, but you have basically, it's one of those meta things where by your action of having to wait for the drone that is your target to move first, you've already given away that you have a drone target on that drone.
Correct.
So. So that's one of the things I haven't looked up the rules on, but because most of the time there are
specific rules about that.
Right, I'm sure there are. And the thing is, I don't think that many that situation really occurs that often, because normally what happens is you got the drones are targeted on the drones are targeted on the drones. So that immediately means that the drones that are targeted on the ship have to go right through the drone, have to go through the drones that are targeted on the drones. Invariably.
Yeah. You know?
So.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But where you could have an interesting situation is if you have a 32-speed drone and a 20-speed drone. And the 20-speeder is targeted on the 32. And the 32 might be able to jinx around
right,
so that it goes past the 20.
In theory, agreed.
Yeah. And certainly, if I suspect that somebody has launched a large 32 speed at me, I know it's 32 speed, but if I suspect it's large, that certainly is something worthy of sending a 20 speed small drone up against it, just because it's a real cheap drone taking out a real expensive one.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So that's a worthy worthy target.
Yeah, but you know, again, the only time that will occur would be if you are basically, the drones are coming in at an angle, and you have the ship going follow when you know, the whole idea of crossing the T, it's actually following the top of that T, so that your drones might fall a little behind, or at the very least, you know, can be possibly jinked around. But again, this is one of those things that would be known. You know,
the whole
idea of speed SB, when it comes to online game, would be to go as fast as possible. And that'd be one way of doing it. So now you no longer have the person, the person has less control, but that speeds up the game a little more. Now, obviously, for the most part, when it comes to tournament play, you don't have you're really thinking a lot about where that drone's going to be moving or that seeking weapon's going to be moving. You got a pretty good idea, because you want it either going, you want it being leading the ship or following the ship, which one? And you know which one you're going to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
So in theory, it shouldn't be an issue. It's like the whole idea with limiting pitching mounds visits for a game, a major league game. The whole idea of that was to keep speed up play in a minor manner, just to keep things going. Just like the year before, 2 years ago, they decided that okay. Instead of actually having the pitcher pitch out, for the intentional walk, you just say, okay, basically tell the batter that you get first base. And there's the whole situation where, one, you no longer have to waste the time throwing the ball. That saves the pitcher from throwing the ball. Also, in that case, part of that was to speed up play. So then you don't have
these right.
Four pitches, which is a minor thing, and also the number of actual occurrences of intentional walks is very low. Of intentional walks per game is probably, for most games, it's zero. The most I've ever seen is like five intentional walks. Five. So you're saving 1 or 2 minutes over the course of a 3-hour game.
Right.
It's like the whole TSA security theater. It kind of shows that you're trying to do something, but are you really having an effect?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. I'm driving through very thick fog right now, and I'm paying a lot of attention to the road.
please do, because I had the nastiest travel I've ever had in my entire life.
Oh.
Which was, last Friday, December 14th. December 14th, when I went to pick up my daughter from Mansfield. They said,
I remember you. Yeah, you said it was like driving through hyperspace.
Yeah, it was basically. On the way up. Okay, it's daylight. It's foggy. Okay. It wasn't easy, but I made it up there. I was concerned about deer jumping out in the middle, in front of the car and so forth. But what was worse is when I came back down and I went from seeing clearly to seeing only 10 feet in front of my car, where I almost missed right. the entrance ramp to Route 81. And when I got on 81, what I did was I was following the line on the side of the road. I couldn't
see. Oh, my.
I could barely see in yeah. front of me. The only thing I could see in front of me is the lights of other cars. And just to make sure I stayed on the highway, I was following the line, you know, with you know the white line on the side of the road.
Right, right. I hear you.
That's the only way I could stay on the highway. In fact, there's only one minor problem with ever doing that. Exit ramps. That white line goes long to the exit ramp. So I always had to keep an eye out for those exit ramps. So they go, like, oh, no, I can't do that. I have to go straight here and make it to the next white line.
right. Well, I'm through the fog. I'm on a 5% grade going down.
Mm-hmm. Cool. But yeah, that was one thing we were obviously discussing. This boy, Christmas spirit, that part of this podcast quickly ended. I went through that pretty quick. But anyhow, I'm also bring up the other topic for this the evening that I was brought to my attention, which is obviously that the SAP Online current client is pretty old. And it is. It's quite old. But the biggest issue with that, you know, one person, let me bring up. Here it is. Mark. Somebody tells me I won't see any actually reply to from any either Dell, Bristol, or Mark. McCulloch. Dell was mentioning he was just concerned that the technology used to create the client is going to be old and outdated, and at some point will stop working. And it's based on Java, and Java will be supported for quite a few years. I think we're good for at least another 5, if not probably another 10.
Right.
Because even if Oracle stop supports the client, makes it so Java is purely the server based, and the client stuff will have to be completely open source. Well, we can go completely open source, and we will be fine.
Right.
But the other thing
you could do is go to C#, maybe.
Will that run on Linux? Will it run on Mac?
I don't know. I would presume they do.
Well, it depends on when you say C#. C# in what context? What's the framework using for the UI work?
Right. I was under the presumption that C# was Microsoft's answer to Java.
It is. Under Windows.
Right. Okay.
Now, one thing which leads me into the other one, which is Mark mentioned that, what you could do is you could redo it like using like Unity. Because what he said was, okay, things have changed a lot in 10, 15 years, and that is no kidding. Today, there are several different ways of doing this. Something like SAP OL through existing editors, i.e., different products. Things especially as simple as SAP OL, which I don't think he understands how complicated SAP Online really is.
I've seen some of the code. There's a lot of it.
No, there's definitely a lot of it, and there's a lot of it that you don't see. See, that's the crazy thing is that It's like, are you actually, have you actually thought about some of this stuff? Because I've done a little bit of Unity programming, just a little bit. I've actually, I did a really simple, here's my counter, moving my counter around the board using the keyboard to actually control the actual ship. And it worked worked quite well. How do you use a new, again, since this is Unity, the background is what? It's a static image. And then you have another game object, which is the actual counter, which you move around the board. I'm also did a little work on SFB Starfleet Battle Force, right? Doing some stuff for that under Unity. It helps that there's a tutorial on how to do card games. So it's like, oh, you know, hey, that's one way of doing it. Anyway, I think extensive work we're going to be done on. So we only would probably actually be less work to redo it through a modern game editor or even Unity. It probably is much less work because the modern editors are so efficient and something like SFB is so simple. It's like, ah, no, it's not. And you end up much better version of SFB Online than trying to update the ancient existing version. And one thing I point out to him that, you know, I play around with Unity. The big issue with SFB Online, it would be, as I pointed out, one, the top part would be the custom UI. Like taking a ship definition that we have of describing all of these ships, loading that into memory, drawing the boxes that need to be drawn, and then allow damage. Okay, you have that object. Now you have to do damage allocation on that object. You know,
right?
It's one of those things that I'm not so sure Mark has actually played SFB. It's like, dude, have you ever tried playing it? Have you actually used the online client? Have you actually thought about what it takes to write the stuff that's behind this UI? Because the UI is only 10% of the code.
Server size 90%.
Yeah. You got the communication, you've got the, you know, damage allocation, you've got the energy allocation. Now there's other, you know, right. Okay, does things like Unity or things like that support the simple concept of tables, like a spreadsheet? Because
right
for SFB Online, spreadsheets are really important. Because you use those tables to represent multiple facets, from the energy allocation to the actual speed, you know, the impulse chart, to also a couple of things that I use. Also use table force, which is okay for showing, okay, what's your drone loadout?
Right.
You know, what is your shuttles? What are the shuttles? Okay, bring up a window which shows the loadout for that shuttle, the loadout for that, you know, for that shuttle or fighter. When it comes to things like, I'm thinking about this. Okay, of course we have the SSDs. Okay, how do you represent them? How do you manage the number of SSDs that are required to play SFB Online?
Yeah.
I know there are ways of Unity actually has, you can get communication modules, but okay, how do you send the communication back and forth? You know, that's one of the things that has been built up, which is the whole idea of events. Okay, you have different kinds of events that gets worked on. One of the things, obviously, that would be a good idea is redoing the back end when it comes to communication, which I really would like to do. So, you know, because I have changed it from the original functionality of SFB Online. The original functionality of SFB Online client was that everybody owned their own canonical copy of their stuff, which doesn't always work out because the shared elements.
Yeah.
Who's the master? What's the canonical copy of that information? I.e. things like what's the impulse number? What turn are you on?
That's well, good question. That should be, I guess the server should keep track of that.
Right, exactly. When you do that, you know, that there should be a central repository for that It's like, okay, well, why don't you put all the canonical data on the server and then everyone else is just a client of that canonical copy, which is one of the things that I did many years ago for SFB Online. So I changed the server itself so that it actually would save all the canonical copies to the server. Now that we still have events that occur, i.e. things like activities. Activities are events. You know, you have an event which says, okay, someone has an activity so that communicates to everyone and say, okay, bring up an activity window.
Right.
And things like that. So it's like, okay, how do you do that? You know, I'd have to look at Unity a heck of a lot more to understand all that. Now, the one thing that I have not looked at, and it's there's a slim possibility I could do this. Actually, it's not too bad. I have to look at Dart, because Dart looks somewhat like Java. And I have to look at it a little more, because it still has some of the context of Java. You know, the whole idea of extends, you can extend a class and things like that. You know, as a programming language, it's quite close to Java. Big surprise, just like C# is quite close to Java. I was listening to a podcast and actually watching the live feed for a show called Floss Weekly this past Wednesday, and they were going through Flutter, which is mainly designed for mobile, but it was written in Dart. And actually, I just for giggles, I watched the tutorial video, which shows, oh, this is what you can do. And the funniest part about it is I'm looking at, oh, this is how you can change the UI for this one widget. In this case, the widget was a button. And I'm looking how they're doing all this. I'm going, Java, 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 Java. Because it reminds me so much of... Sorry about that. My cat knocked off my mouse. But what it reminded me so much of was programming for Java Swing, where you programmatically would draw everything. If you needed it was a little more elegant to a certain degree, you know, because you create panels and then you assign layouts to that panels. In this case, the panels and the layouts are one object. So each widget has its own kind of layout that you can use when you use a widget that acts as a container. So, you know, I'm looking at that and going, you're redoing the way Java did its UI. You know, it's like, it looks awfully darn familiar to me because I've done this for years, you know. And I have not looked completely at the Dart language, you know. I might look at it. In theory, I could possibly redo it in Dart and possibly write it as a Flutter app. which would be interesting, as long as I don't have to worry about the communication portion. If I can come up with a new way of communicating, which is one thing I was working on for the game server, you know, have it so that it was completely, basically, an IRC based on web interface. You know, you would still use all the IRC commands, but the session and all that kind of thing would be stored on the server, and then you would actually get the commands back, and you could still communicate in IRC, which is what the back end the communication platform currently is for SAP Online, and which a lot of people know. Obviously,
right.
There are other servers that support gaming in a better way, you know, where you can have the rooms and so forth, so you can do the chatting, and then you can actually store these objects on the server and that kind of thing. I'd have to look that up, but you know, it would be possible to rewrite it maybe in Flutter, because one thing they only support mobile. But as Randall Schwartz, who's a Flutter fanatic, and actually he is a official Google something, I forgot it or not. Basically, he's passed all the tests so that he can actually teach Dart, basically. He said it in the podcast. I don't remember off the top of my head. But anyway, one thing he saw in one of the things that are to come is basically, have you ever heard of Electron?
What's that?
Have you ever heard of Electron?
Electron. Is that a programming language?
No.
You're not talking about the physics particle.
No, I'm not. What I'm talking about is things like the Slack client, VS Code. What else? I'm thinking about what are Electron-based apps. Basically, what Electron apps are basically a JavaScript app bound by an instance of Chrome. And that becomes the application. Oh. I think people use like React Native or something like that. But anyway, yeah, what?
Yeah, at this point, my brain is trying to listen to you, but I need to concentrate on driving, and I need to get off the phone so I can concentrate on driving, or I'm going to crash.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Well, you have a good night.
Yeah, I can only do it for so long, and then my brain gets tired. Understood. Especially under dark, rainy conditions.
Understood.
Well, okay. Hey, good night.
Okay, you have a Merry Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. Well, we're going to be tying up things quite quickly. Just for those in the audience who have never heard, as I mentioned, when it comes to Electron, is, you know, things like Slack, where basically what it is a web-based UI. They use JavaScript to develop a UI, that and I think like React Native, and they tie that into an actual instance of Chrome, and that's how they deliver the application. Because if you ever I'm going to mention this real quick, and I'm going to move off because of it's tech-related and not SMB-related. And that is that what that seems to me indicate with actual Microsoft going that way too. You know, they're switching out the engine for their Edge browser to be Chrome. You know, Chromium is going to be their drawing engine instead of their own drawing engine. And which makes the ecosystem quite smaller, which is really awful in my mind, you know, instead of having an open standard and force everyone to go against an open standard. But anyhow, that just seems to indicate what they might be doing is doing what we did with Java. Well, what was old is new again. That is, I can easily imagine them taking that core Chrome module, you know, the DLLs, whatever, shared libraries, whatever that needs to be used, delivered a shared copy for everybody. So you have one copy, and then you actually deliver a Electron based app, and what it does, it uses the shared copy that's with the application. And then one thing that Microsoft just announced yesterday, which is the whole idea of each application that they have can run under a sandbox, a mini VM. So that in that case, you know, with Electron based app, you can actually have the shared code, but it'd be read only because of the sandboxing for that application. So you wouldn't have to worry about it being corrupted from the different applications. Obviously there's always the version hell problem where your application supports a certain version of the subsystem that you're relying on, the APIs and so forth. In this case, you know, the Chromium engine, you might rely on, oh, it's version 10, and someone installs version 11 on your machine. Now you're using version 11, but your application never been tested on version 11. So I can see that happening all over again, because the whole idea was originally with Java is that you installed a JVM onto your computer, and then that could be the shared code, the shared binaries that you would share among all of your applications. And what actually has changed and for like Mac and for Windows is that JVM has become embedded in the application itself. So you have multiple copies of a JVM all over your system. And that's fine for the most part. The only time that comes an issue, obviously, is with a mobile app, because you want to minimize the amount of space used by an application. But anyhow, one thing I was mentioning was that Flutter, one thing that Randall Schwartz found out, which was that Flutter in theory could actually create desktop applications like as a replacement to Electron. You know, and hopefully that would be a lot smaller and more compact than having the full Chromium rendering engine with all its issues, all its bloat, in, you know, as part of your application. While with Dart and Flutter, you can actually minimize it, so you wouldn't have nearly the issues. So I think we'll wrap up the evening with that. I wish everyone a happy Christmas, and if you do not listen to me before the new year, have a happy new year. I will be doing another recording, another podcast in a week's time on December 27th. At least that is the plan. I see no reason why that would change, but you know, obviously if that changes, I will tell you, and we'll see what we come up with for that week's episode. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.